ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। किशन परमाजी आस्क्ड मी what is the significance of when celebrating Deepavali. I think 23rd we are going to have Deepavali, no? Amavasya comes into. So on the day of Deepavali, Deepa Avali, Avalihi means a row of, line is called Avali. A list is also called Avalihi. When you write, make a list of things, a list, what all I want, that's a Avalihi. A row is called Avalihi. A line is also called Avalihi. So, Deepa, Deepanam Avalihi. Deepavali, Deepavali, Deepavalihi. So, the row of lamps. We light many lamps, which implies what? There's everywhere there is light, light, light. There's only light. So the Deepavali symbolizes that there is only light everywhere. The understanding, there is only light everywhere, which means you do not see darkness. And it is celebrated on an Amavasya day, which is a dark new moon day. So really it is very significant, nice to see, you know, lights everywhere, the darkness, isn't it? Actually, in the morning, early morning of Deepavali, we are supposed to get up very early in the morning. And we are supposed to have shower and wear new clothes and, you know, have crackers, eat sweets, like everything supposed to do before 6 o'clock in the morning. By the time the sun comes, we'll be ready. And people who live even other part, all over India or anywhere, also any part of the world also, whoever celebrates Deepavali, on that particular day, they say, they only use the expression Ganga Snanam. Every day you go to shower, you have shower. Every day you go to, no, you have bath, you have shower. No, you bathe. But still, we don't use the expression Ganga Snanam. No, Snanam means having dip, having shower. Snanam. So here, Ganga Snanam means having dip in Ganga. It's called Ganga Sanam. Ganga is a river, isn't it? So even if you are not living somewhere near Ganga river in India, North India, some part where Ganga is flowing, all over, isn't it? Whether in Rishikesh or in Delhi, wherever Ganga is flowing, people can have Ganga Snanam. But living any part of the world, any part of India, how can they have Ganga Snanam? But still they call that day, they say Ganga Snanam. Even if you use your Thames River water, still it is Ganga Snanam. Thames is a London Ganga. So what is the meaning of having dipped in Ganga? Why only Ganga River? Why do you say Ganga Snanam, not any other Snanam? Why it is dipped in Ganga? Because the river Ganga is the one which has been, big river, and it's a very big river. In fact, in India it's the holiest river. All the rivers are holy. Any river is holy. But Ganga is very specially holy because it symbolizes the Veda Shastram. And Veda Shastram, the entire Vedic scripture happens to be coming downwards through the teaching tradition, the lineage of teachers. Karna Paramparaya, Guru Sishya Paramparaya, for long, timelessly, from time immemorial, we cannot trace the date. It has been flowing downwards from one teacher to the other, from one teacher to the other. That is why that we say this knowledge also is flowing. Vedic wisdom has been flowing. And each teacher is like a pipeline. And Vedic wisdom is like the water flowing through. Therefore, we say the Vedic wisdom is flowing through. How? From one mind to another mind, knowledge is transferred. Whether it's Vedic chanting or Vedantic exposition, the entire Vedic wisdom has been flowing from one teacher's mind to a student's mind, and from his mind to another student's mind, it has been flowing downwards, from one to the other. Wisdom is transferred from the teacher's mind to the student's mind. And the student who becomes a teacher later on, as the one who knows the method of unfoldment, the sampradaya with the teacher, from his mind, it goes to another student's mind. That's why wisdom, the knowledge is in the form of thoughts, and the knowledge obtaining in the form of thought travels from the teacher's mind to the student's mind through the words, through communication. So words serve as the vehicle which carry this knowledge, and they enter the ear of the student. The words, the wisdom through the vehicle of words, enter into the ears of the student, and it goes to where? From there it reaches the mind of the student. There again becomes what? Knowledge. It was in the form of the knowledge, it got communicated through the words, and words carry the knowledge, enter into the words, ears of the student, and reaches the mind of the student. There becomes what? Knowledge. Because of giving, the knowledge does not become reduced, isn't it? It is as it is. Like how many of times should you download? You can increase the number of downloads, still the original content remains, okay, without getting reduced, like that. In fact, it enhances, sometimes the teaching enhances the clarity. So, it goes. That is why we say Karna Parampara, the lineage of the teacher-student lineage, and which continues to exist through the communication. This is a Karna Parampara, Guru Parampara, Guru Sishya Parampara. We say the Parampara, the lineage. So what, now we said this, the knowledge, the Vedic wisdom, which has been flowing downwards from one teacher to the other student, it's called, we say, Vedic flow of wisdom. And who is the first teacher? We cannot say. But the proof is what? Today, my teacher exists, which proves his teacher, you know, must have been there. Isn't it? For him, his teacher was there. And his teacher is the proof for his great other teacher's existence, to prove the existence of the other teacher. Like that, every present teacher becomes the proof for the teacher who would have existed before, from whom the person would have got the wisdom, knowledge. If you ask who is the, you can never trace the first teacher, just as you cannot trace your first foremost of the great grandparent, you cannot trace your first teacher. That's why we call it Anadi Parampara. Anadi Parampara means what? The beginningless, no, the lineage of teachers, a beginningless tradition, a timeless tradition this is. So it be endless also, because just how it has been beginningless, it will be endless also. Because knowledge does not become extinct as long as it is communicated, it is retained, isn't it? Preserved. Through teaching, knowledge is preserved. So it has been there. And here, River Ganga, called Jnana Prabhahini, the flow of knowledge, it symbolizes this eternal, why eternal? As I said, beginningless, endless, timeless, eternal flow of this wisdom, Vedic wisdom, is symbolized by this flow of Ganga. Ganga symbolizes, so that's why Ganga is very holy. Shastram is very important. Because Veda Shastram serves as a means of knowledge of the truth, and which will bless one with what? The moksha, therefore, which is the absolute end. Therefore, definitely, Shastram is highly revered, and Ganga, which symbolizes Shastram, also is highly revered. That is why we never go and put our foot straight away into the Ganga river. Always we bend, touch the water, do namaskaram to the water, take this water, sprinkle on your head, then only we'll slowly get into the water for dip, for having dip. Ganga is revered so much. We do aarti in the evening, every day Ganga aarti is happening. And people go and do japa in the bank of Ganga. But they bow to Ganga. Not only Ganga, any river we bow to. And Ganga being the symbol, representative of the eternal flow of Vedic wisdom, so she symbolizes the Veda Shastram. That's why highly revered. And if we go and have, on Deepavali day, people are supposed to have Ganga Snanam means. And whoever goes to any part of North India where Ganga river is flowing, especially Rishikesh, etc., people go and have their dips. So having, why specifically you are asked to have three dips in Ganga? We go and sit and play for so long, that's a different thing. People like to go and sit in the river, people who can swim, they swim to some point. But why particularly you are asked to have three dips, at least three dips? You have to completely, you know, block your nose and completely go inside, all your back, everything should get wet, isn't it? Just go inside. Come out. Get yourself completely soaked in the water and come out. Three times you are asked to do. Why? Because the first dip stands for Shravanam. Second dip symbolizes Mananam. Third dip symbolizes Nididhyasanam. So listening to the systematic, you know, regular, continuous study of the scripture with the help of the competent teacher for length of time is called what? Shravanam. Because systematic, regular study of the scripture alone will help one to study step by step without missing any links in between, help one to understand clearly the vision of the scripture. What is that one needs to finally clearly understand by studying the scripture? The vision of the scripture, the Veda Shastram, will be clear only if a person goes step by step. Sadishi is called what? Shravanam. Which means you get yourself soaked in the study of the Shastram. Study, study, study and get yourself soaked. That is what? First dip. After having studied the Shastram, before you begin to study the Shastram, we are ignorant of the truth. So as ignorant people, we enter into Shastra Ganga and we do the first dip of Shravanam and get ourselves totally soaked in that Shastra Ganga. No, then get out, come out. Now your Shastra Shravanam has been done. After having heard, studied the Shastram, you are no more ignorant of the truth. You have Jnanam, knowledge. You are not ignorant of the truth anymore. You have the knowledge, but that knowledge is still need not be completely clear, doubt-free knowledge. Doubtful knowledge is as good as ajnanam, ignorance. Before there was ignorance. After study, you have knowledge. You are no more ignorant, but your knowledge is not doubtless knowledge, doubt-free knowledge, still doubtful knowledge. How do we know whether our knowledge is doubtful or doubt-free? If somebody else comes and tells you, oh, you have understood this, I think I read this book and there it says Achintya Veda Veda, some other doubt comes. Some other doubt, no? Somebody else is saying that, and can't they be right? Because other person has a doubt. Or somebody else must have given that doubt to the person. Because so many people, so many minds, it's not so many. There are definitions, there are theories, there are views, as many views, you know, are there, you know, as many minds. So many views and so many people have so many views. If somebody else comes and tells you some other view, oh, immediately you have a doubt. Maybe they are right. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe that's also right. Such a doubt might come. It is possible. Which means your knowledge is not very clear, ascertained. You have the knowledge, but any other person with any other view can come and shake your understanding, which means you do not have ascertained, doubt-free, assimilated, unshakable vision, but you have doubtful knowledge, doubtful understanding. One person comes and asks something, you get shaken. Isn't it? Which means the knowledge must be unshakable, isn't it? Unshaken knowledge. For which you have to see who, if whatever views are there, whatever possible views are there, okay, you can make it very clear by reflecting upon what you have heard during Shravanam, during the study, initial study of the scriptures, whatever you have been systematically, regularly studying, and reflecting upon what you have already heard and understood and retained. If you have not yet heard, first you have to listen. If you have already heard, and you must have understood also. So having heard, I heard, but I haven't understood means what? You have to re-listen. So you must have heard it, you must have understood it. I have understood, but I have not retained also problem. Therefore, you must listen, understand, I must retain also. So, Shastra Shravanam, when you are doing Shravanam, study means people don't understand. Every Saturday come to the class and listen to what the Swami is saying and then go back and again next week only they'll see the book. That is not Shravanam. Study means every class, what is being said, have you heard it, first of all, without any distraction in the class. Even in the class, distraction and sleep and then tired and then some dozing and then some discussion and then lots of things. So listening to the class, you should ask, have you understood what has been said today? Even the repetition is there. If I have understood it, now have I heard it fully, properly? If I heard it, if I understood it, and if I have understood, have I retained it? I understood in the class, afterwards I don't remember. No, it means you have not retained it. So retention is very important. In the Shravanam itself involves three steps: listening, understanding, retaining what has been heard and understood. So when such doubts come, we have heard it, we have understood it, we have retained it, but other person comes and puts his views or some other views of the same reality, when they come with their own understanding, then we should not have any doubts. If we still have some doubts, really our understanding is shaken means then we have to reflect upon what we have already heard, understood and retained. Reflecting upon what we have heard, understood and retained will help us resolve the doubts caused by my own thinking or caused by others' thinking or caused by others' views also. Which means one can see how from their standpoint they're correct or incorrect, what are the logical defects, the fallacies they have in their thinking, the views. This knowledge will become very clear. Then how now your understanding of the Shastram is really logically, non-challengeable, because logically also you can, it doesn't contradict your reasoning, how it is correct. So that means you see that your doubts are all resolved. So this process of reflecting upon what has been heard, understood and retained, thereby resolving the all possible doubts that can arise caused by one's own thinking or others' thinking, is called mananam. This is next step. So the second dip stands for what? Mananam. This is the second step involved in the attainment of knowledge. So the attainment of knowledge involves three steps: Shravanam and Mananam. Then, okay, now after Mananam, one can think what? I have understood very clearly, which means the knowledge becomes clear, doubt-free knowledge. After Shravanam, you have doubtful knowledge. After Mananam, I'm not saying, some people may have doubt-free knowledge even after Shravanam itself. So, Pratibandhas may not be there. Very few, very rare. But for other people who have doubts, the Mananam next step also is required. Then knowledge becomes what? Doubt-free, clear knowledge. But even though it is very clear, doubt-free knowledge, still one may forget one's clear knowledge also. It is possible to forget what one has clearly understood also. What makes one forget this clear, doubt-free knowledge? Forgetting means what? No. Because we have remained ignorant for very long time, and whatever views and notions we had when before we attained the knowledge we had before, and those notions still they are in our subconscious, so that they'll be surfacing, so that the old habits, you know, always the old habit has the influence of making you go back to the same thing. The sense, it is possible for you to forget and hold on to the old habitual errors. So still, after the vision of the Shastram, after Shravanam, after Mananam also, now my vision is very clear vision, still I have old views, old notions entertained in my mind. How is it possible? Before, the notions you had about yourself were wrong. The notions you had about the world also were wrong. Your perception of the world was wrong. The perception of yourself was wrong. So, it is natural for you to have wrong notions and views before the knowledge. Now, after the Shravanam and Mananam, having clear knowledge, the notion you have about yourself must have changed. It has changed in spite of having a different, in spite of having corrected the understanding of oneself and the world, still there are errors, means those errors, the errors we had before the Shravanam were error caused by your ignorance, because you hadn't studied Shastram then. Now after Shravanam, Mananam, after having clear understanding also, if still there are errors, means those errors are caused by your habit. Habit caused error. I gave a story when I was doing Gita class, 6th chapter. I won't repeat the story again. Habitual errors are possible. So how are we going to resolve those habitual errors? For which we say, Nididhyasanam is the step. Repeatedly remembering, dwelling upon, focusing on what you have clearly understood will help you what? Will help you resolve that habit caused errors also, which means your doubt-free, a clear doubt-free knowledge will become ascertained, assimilated, unforgettable, ever remembered knowledge. How? Now what is the step to make it unforgettable knowledge? Nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam is actually contemplation. Contemplation is meditation. Why I say contemplation is meditation? Because it is a mental activity, but still what you are meditating upon is not any object, not any ordinary thing, not any object which symbolizes the Lord, not Sagunam Brahma. Here the object of meditation is not the object, but the very, not even the subject, but the very swarupam of the subject. The swarupam, the truth of the very meditator himself, happens to be the object of meditation. There is no difference between meditator and the meditated. Subject, object, meditator, meditated, difference is not there in contemplation, Nididhyasanam. Why? Because the object of meditation is not an object. It is the very swarupam, very truth of the subject of meditation, the meditator. Dhyatuhu swarupa. So, swarupa anusandhanam is here, dhyanam, meditation here. Therefore, nididhyasanam is contemplation, which is a meditation where the meditator, meditated, the difference is not there. For which the object of meditation is one's own swarupam. Even Nididhyasanam is possible only if you have done already Shravanam. Mananam is okay. The Shravanam you must have done already. Why? Because you must have understood your own real nature very clearly, doubtlessly. You still have a doubt about your real nature. How can you dwell upon your nature, real nature? What is one's own real nature? What is one's own swarupam? If still doubt is there, what my swarupam is, I'm not really very clear. How can I dwell upon it? So, even in general meditation, you cannot meditate upon something which you do not know at all. The object of meditation must be already very clearly known to you. Even if I ask you to meditate upon an apple, and you must know what the word apple, what that sound apple is, what is that, is it a word, meaningful word, and what is the meaning of that word, what is the object indicated by that word, and is it a green apple, red apple, that doubt might come. What should I meditate on? Or I can specifically say, may you all meditate upon green cooking apple available in my garden. Specifically if I say, or I can show you an apple in front of me, and I can tell you also, then you know very clearly, oh, let me close my eyes and let me see, meditate upon that apple. In fact, you know very well, meditation itself is what? Always Bhagavan, Ishwaraha, Sagunam Brahma must be the object of meditation. Only then we call it a meditation. If the object of meditation is not the Lord, Ishvara, no? Anything other than Ishvara will be what is not meditation. It is a simple technique of improving your concentration. It's a mere concentration. We can't call it a meditation. The object, according to Shastram, what I am focusing on must be an object which symbolizes Bhagavan, Ishwaraha, the Sagunam Brahma, the whole. It should be very clear. Many people who go for meditation, they think anything I can meditate on. You can meditate on anything, but that anything must be the symbol, must symbolize the Bhagavan, the Lord, the Whole. Isn't it? Simply without seeing something as Ishvara, I'm sitting and meditating on this given object just for the sake of, you know, meditating, then we do not call it dhyanam, meditation. That's why when you say meditation is a mental activity, manasa vyaparaha. So mental activity is meditation, not mere mental activity. The mental activity for which the object of meditation must be what? Bhagavan, the Lord. Only then we call it dhyanam and upasanam. Saguna brahma vishya manasa vyaparaha. Simply sit and worry. That's also clear, pure mental activity. No physical movement is required there. To sit and worry. Sometimes we sit and worry, no? Alochanam. See the roof. It's called alochanam. Alokanam. When you are worrying, worry is what? No physical movement is required there. Pure mental activity. Or planning. How to get to Leicester and now how to get to my daughter's house and how to, you know, when you're sitting and planning before you leave the house, the whole journey you plan. That is what? Mental activity. So, see, mere mental activity does not become meditation. The object of meditation must be what? Symbolize Bhagavan. Only then it is dhyanam. But that is Saguna Brahma Upasanam is meditation, I said. But here, in the dhyasanam, the object of meditation definitely is not an object at all. Because what the attention of the mind has to focus on is the very reality. And reality having been recognized as one's own real nature, not as an object. So the object of meditation is what? Your own swarupam. Very truth of the meditator. Therefore, there is no distance between the meditator and the meditator's real nature. There is no distance. As well, there is no difference. Subject-object division also is not here. That is why nididhyasanam is impossible. Nididhyasanam is the meditation which will bless one with ascertained, assimilated, unforgettable, ever-remembered vision of the reality as one's own self, in the wake of which one can see one's real nature being the whole. That is why always nididhyasanam must follow what? Shravanam and mananam. At least definitely shravanam. Leave the mananam. At least shravanam one must have done. How can you meditate upon something which you do not know? First of all, people who are interested in meditation, want to meditate, who understand meditation as the only way for attainment of the, you know, the truth. In fact, they should remember, do I know what should I meditate on? Then let me meditate. Because meditation, as I told you earlier, will not remove ignorance at all. And here, our Shastra makes it very clear, the whole problem, a human problem, is in the form of what? Ignorance of the truth. And you are studying the very Shastra as a means of knowledge. For what? To resolve your problem. If the knowledge is not the solution for your problem, why should we break our head to study the Shastram? Why should we attend the knowledge at all? Why should we be interested in knowledge? It doesn't serve any purpose. There is a purpose. We are not fools. We are utilitarians. What benefit do we get by attaining knowledge? We are very clear. That is why we know the benefit of knowledge. We know what we really want. And we know the condition and the connection between knowledge and what we want to achieve, what we need in life. Therefore, this knowledge, ignorance causes the problem. Therefore, knowledge is the only way. Knowledge alone can help me resolve the ignorance. That's why I'm interested in knowledge. I know the value of the knowledge. So for knowledge, meditation will not remove your ignorance. Removal of ignorance needs only knowledge, not meditation. Meditation is a mental activity, will not remove. That's why I said, the Saguna Brahma Upasanam, the meditation which you practice before the knowledge, not knowing what to meditate on, when you're practicing meditation, there the object of your focus is a symbol which stands for, isn't it, Bhagavan. It means your object of meditation is Sagunam Brahma. That's only for mental purity and steadiness. So meditation can bless you with mental purity and steadiness. It cannot do more than anything, more than that. Anything else. It cannot remove ignorance. But Shastras had studied, Shravanam alone will remove the ignorance. But even the Shravanam removes the ignorance. Why? Because Shravanam will bless you with the knowledge. So in the wake of the knowledge, ignorance resolves. But that knowledge may be doubtful, for which I said next step is Mananam. And for that to become ever remembered, unforgettable knowledge, you need contemplation, meditation. So the meditation after the attainment of the knowledge is for what? For ascertaining my knowledge. For assimilating my knowledge. Which means after knowledge alone, you are really meditating. You know why? You know what to meditate on. That is the meditation. That is the Vedantic meditation. So contemplation, Vidhyasanam is the Vedantic meditation which you know, do after knowing what to meditate on. And this Vidhyasanam will bless you with what? Doubt-free ascertained vision. That Nididhyasanam is symbolized by the third dip in Ganga. Okay? First dip, Shravanam. Second dip, Mananam. Third dip, Nididhyasanam. Now, when you get out of Ganga, you are completely, you have soaked yourself in Jnanam. Jnana Ganga, and come out all over Jnanam flowing, knowledge flowing. And what happened? You have washed off all the dirt from you. What is it? Ignorance. Ignorance caused erroneous notions, erroneous perceptions, and the error caused confusions and problems and worries and pains. Everything gets washed off and you come out as what? With a new different perspective. Entered into Ganga as ignorant, confused, worried, individual with all problems. Come out as what? Come out of Shastra Ganga as what? With a different perspective of yourself, different perspective of the world. My God. Completely the perspective change has happened. To symbolize that, now you are not the same individual anymore. Why? You went as an Ajnani Shudra. Isn't it? You went as an Ajnani. Then you come out as a Jnani. Now this change in the perspective. This perspective change as a transformed personality. When you come out to symbolize that, we wear new clothes. We can't change the bodies, so we wear new clothes on Deepavali day. Why we wear new clothes, isn't it? We wear new clothes, but same buddhi is there. So buddhi changes, isn't it? That is what symbolized by wearing new clothes. All of us wear new clothes. And who is the, then we also have what now? Fireworks, no? Crackers. Why? Because celebration. Narakasura symbolizes the jnanam, destroyed. Ignorance is destroyed. Not destroyed, resolved. Narakasura is all the asura cause problems are also gone now. Therefore, we are celebrating. What? Before you thought, everything is illusion. Now you don't see anything as illusion. There's no illusion at all. World is not illusion. You see the whole perspective change. You see yourself as the fullness. So you have the, now what now? You are enjoying the greatest luxury of reveling in the wisdom. Reveling in what? The fullness as your own real nature. So eat sweets. Eating sweets is what? Mainly Deepavali. Because you are reveling in fullness. There is no greater luxury than reveling in knowledge, wisdom. There's no greater luxury. Doesn't matter where you are, still there is luxury. Minus comforts also, one can, jnani can have luxury. With all comforts also, you may miss your luxury. There's no greater luxury than reveling in knowledge. So, and then we light the everywhere lamps, Deepavali. Why? Because you're in the different perspective, you see everything as knowledge. No illusion. Before, when you went into Ganga, you saw the whole world as what? Differently. Now you're looking at the world as manifestation of knowledge. That is symbol is what? Everywhere lamps, lights. Understand? This is Deepavali. You see the whole Jagat as Ishvara. You see everything, all that is here is only Bhagavan. That's why concept of Lord has changed. The way you look at world is changed. You look at yourself as different. You see everything as what? Manifestation of Ishvara. And we can't say one God is there, many gods are there. For you, what is there is only the Lord. Or everything is manifestation of knowledge. Knowledge. Every inert thing is what? Knowledge. Every living thing, non-living thing, everything is knowledge. Illumination of consciousness, manifestation of pure knowledge. That is light, isn't it? It's called perspective change. this is the Deepavali. In fact, there is no greater light than yourself. You are the absolute light. Suppose if you ask what is light, a physicist will have his own definition of light. But anyway, we understand this much. Light is that which lights up, that which has the capacity to illumine. That which lights up is light, which means that which does not require a light to come to light, that which is self-luminous. Light is that which is self-luminous, which means it does not require any other light, does not depend upon something else to come to light. It shines by itself, and in its presence, by its mere presence, it brings other opaque things to light. Therefore, it's called light, isn't it? If you apply this definition of light, then Shastram says, even the sources of light that we know are not actually the lights. They're only relative lights. What are all the lights we know? Sun, amazing, isn't it? And compare the whole world, all the elements and the elementals, all the objects here are except sun, except fire. Fire element. Everything else, what now? Opaque in nature. Opaque means opaque thing does not shine by itself. For opaque thing to come to light, to shine, it needs to reflect light. And to reflect light, it is dependent on the light. Opaque thing does not have light of its own. That is not self-luminous. If there is no light here, all our bodies cannot shine. All the objects here, nothing can shine here. Why? Because all of them are opaque. They don't have light of their own. Therefore, when they do not shine, they lose even the status of being existent. Which means even though the objects are there, all these opaque things which are there in darkness are as good as non-existent. Why they are as good as non-existent? Because they cannot shine. If they do not shine, they cannot be known. So for them to shine, thereby to have the status of being existent, they need to be brought to light. They need to be illumined. So we say, whereas sun, moon, stars, fire, lightning. Let us take these few things. Sun, moon, stars, fire, lightning. All these are self-luminous sources of light. Why they are, from the standpoint of this opaque world of objects, the so-called sources of light are said to be the light, because this light is not dependent on any of the opaque things here for it to shine, for it to come to light, isn't it? It is self-luminous. We need not bring another torch light or another light to see whether there is light here or not. Why? Because light is self-revealing. Self-revealing. Therefore, the standpoint of the opaque things, these sources of light, sun, moon, fire, you can include electric light also. All of them are what now? The lights, from the standpoint of the other opaque things. But the same sources of light, such as sun, moon, even these bulbs, etc., which are now shining, they are also really relative lights. They are all dependent on some other light to come to light. They need to be illumined. What is that light because of which all these so-called sources of light shine? For a blind person, even though there's braille method is available for his study, one object he can never understand is the light. How the light is, he can never understand. Which means, if the seeing power is not there, light cannot shine. Understand now? Therefore, from the standpoint of the opaque things, light, the sources of light are lights. But because the light shines by itself, opaque things shine after the sources of light such as sun, moon, etc. And in Sanskrit, the Upanishad uses these words, bhati anubhati. Opaque things, light, the bulb now, electric bulb now, the switch is on, the bulb shines, bhati. Suryaha bhati, sun shines. Opaque things shines after, anubhati. And the same light, sources of light, from the standpoint of your seeing power, they shine after your seeing power. Your seeing power is not dependent on the light to shine. Whether light is there or not, your seeing power can see. Understand what? See means what? It is there. It is not, seeing power is not dependent on the light for its existence. Therefore, seeing power is what now? Bhati, other lights, anubhanti. The sources of light shine after your seeing power. Now, even the seeing power also, the standpoint of the other sources of light and other opaque things, seeing power is the light, isn't it? Seeing power is the light which lights up all the light and the objects reflecting the light. But even seeing power also does not shine by itself. Swayam na bhati. Because even if you are sitting here, if your mind is not with you here, the mind is elsewhere, mind is thinking of something else, you may be looking at me, but you will not see me. You are not seeing me. Understand what I'm saying? You may be staring, keeping your eyes open, you're staring, but the mind is elsewhere means you are not really seeing. Which means the mind must back, attention of the mind must be with the seeing power. Only then the seeing power can function as a seeing power. Understand? When the seeing power, if the attention of the mind is not backing the seeing power, then the seeing power is as good as non-existent. Therefore we say, mind is not dependent on the seeing power. Understand? For its existence, for the seeing power, for it to be able to function as seeing power is dependent on the attention of the mind backing it. Therefore, the standpoint of the mind, seeing power also what now? Anubhati. Mind bhati, mind shines independently. The seeing power shines after the mind. So these opaque things shine after the light, sources of light. The so-called sources of light, only relative lights, that they shine after your seeing power. And the seeing power is shining after what now? Your mind. For mind is the light which lights up your seeing power. Seeing power is the light which lights up the so-called sources of light and the objects reflecting light. And here, what is that? You know, does the mind shine by itself? Mind also is elective light. From the standpoint of the seeing power, mind is the light. But mind also does not shine by itself. What is that light without which mind cannot function as mind? Mind cannot shine, mind cannot have the status of being existent. What is that light? We say that light, no, the is you. You are that light. How do you say that you are the light? Because when the mind goes to three states, is it? Three states of mind, in terms of three states of experience, and each state of mind, each state of experience changes. The waking goes, deep sleep state comes, deep sleep state changes, dream comes, dream goes, again deep sleep state comes, again deep sleep state goes, again waking comes. Between the states of mind, the states of experience change, keeps on changing. But what is that? No, because of whose presence, the states of mind changing, the change of the states of mind, states of experience, is known, is it? What is that? There is the experiencer, the witness, who does not change, who is always there. Seeing, knowing, observing, experiencing, the states of mind changing. The experiencer is what you are, the experiencer. Without the experiencer, there cannot be experience. And what are you? You say, the experiencer is, you the experiencer are the consciousness, which we understood in the class. Therefore, consciousness is the absolute light, which is self-existent, because consciousness does not depend upon any other light to come to light. Self-evident, self-revealing, self-effulgent, self-existent. So, Swayam Bhati, Swayam Jyotihi, Paranjyotihi, absolute light, self, no, luminous, absolutely self-luminous, what now, self-revealing light is what? Swayam Jyotihi, Paranjyotihi, self-revealing, self-evident, self-effulgent consciousness is the absolute light. Mind is what? From the standpoint of the seeing, not the seeing power now, you can take all the five sense powers. The power of hearing is also light. It illumines the object called sound. Understand? It brings to light the object called sound. The power of smelling is a light which illumines the object called smell. Each sense power is a light with reference to its corresponding object. The power of taste is a light which brings to light, illumines the tastes. Each sense power is what? A light lighting up its own corresponding object. For we say five lights. In the Vishayaveka class, I said five lights are what? Five devas. And mind is deva deva. Because all the sense powers are lights from the standpoint of the corresponding objects. What is the whole world now? The whole world, which is experienced, available for experience, because they are illumined. They brought to light. The whole world is nothing but obtaining in five different forms as five different objects. There's no sixth object for you to know. There only the whole entire cosmos is what? Yeah, nothing but the fivefold objects constitute this whole universe. For the entire universe, however big, vast it is dependent on your sense powers to shine, to come to light. Which means the world does not have independent existence. Okay, inseparable, does not have independent existence outside of your sense powers. That is why all the sense powers are lights which light up all the objects, including the so-called lights, the sources of light. Therefore, the whole world shines after what? Your sense, light of your sense powers. And if the light sense powers are not dependent on the world of objects, but the world of objects is dependent on sense powers. The world shines after your sense, light of sense powers. And this five light in the form of sense powers shine after the light called mind. For mind is, you know, is a light which lights up all the light, sense powers. Now the consciousness, the witness consciousness is the absolute light which lights up all the minds. And how many consciousnesses are there? Very expression is, very question is wrong. Therefore the one and the only consciousness lights up all the minds which light up the sense powers, which light up the world. Therefore, the relative sense powers are relative illuminators, because they illumine the world of opaque, world of objects. And the mind is relative illuminator, because mind illumines the sense powers. But consciousness is the absolute illuminator. Consciousness cannot be, need not be, will never be illumined by anything else. It is self-luminous, self-revealing, self-evident. Consciousness is the, but no, the absolute light. Consciousness is not the light. The absolute light, from the standpoint of the mind, is what? None other than consciousness. Okay? So, you are the Atma, the absolute light. There is no light. Understand? This is the, or which is the light now? Understanding of light has to go now, change. This meaning is, like I'm just simply casually talking to you. This is the two verses, one in Mundaka Upanishad and the same verse, one in Kathopanishad. The mantra, give this meaning. There is no greater light than you. You are the light of all the lights. Na tatra suryo bhati, na chandra tarakam, nema vidyuto bhanti, kutoya magnihi, tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam, tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhati. I heard this, Pooja Swamiji, many times. As a child, I heard. As a young girl, I heard. As a sannyasini, I heard. Many times I would have heard. I never felt bored with this, the way Swamiji teaches us. Many times I heard him talk in public talks and also in the class. So, Suryaha Tatra Nabhati. We think sun is self-luminous. Of course, relatively, sun is the light. Suryahana bhati, sun does not shine by itself. Sun also, just as opaque things shine after the sun also shines after the another light called your seeing power. Suryahana bhati na swayam na bhati does not shine by itself. It shines after the other light called your seeing power. Na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam, not the moon, not the stars, na chandra tarakam. What about this lightning? Ne na ima vidyutaha bhanti. Not even this lightning, all the sources of light, the mantra says, na suryaha na bhati, chandraha na bhati, tarakam na bhati, imaha vidyutaha na bhanti. Even this lightning and the flashes of lightning really did not shine independently. Why? Because tameva bhan tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam nema vidyuto bhanti. Now, when you are waving light in front of Bhagavan, na arati, the question comes, kutaha ayam agnihi? When all these sources of light do not shine by themselves, understand, and where is this light? Kutaha agni, kutaha ayam agnihi? How can the fire shine by itself? Even though fire, no, is self-luminous, the standpoint of opaque things, even the fire is dependent on what? Your seeing power. Fire also does not shine by itself. Kutoya magnihi. All these, the sources of light, shine after your seeing power. Therefore, your seeing power is the light which lights up all the sources of light. And the seeing power, not only seeing power is the light, each sense power is a light, the standpoint of its own corresponding object. Therefore, all these sense powers also are what? Lights which light up their corresponding objects. And the sense powers themselves shine after the mind. They cannot shine by themselves. The anubhanti. Anubhati means shines after. Bhati means shines. Now, mind also bhati, the standpoint of the sense powers, but mind also anubhati, the standpoint of the experiencer, witness, consciousness. And who's kakaha bhati now? Only atma bhati, isn't it? Chaitanyam bhati. Therefore, consciousness svayam bhati. Everything else anubhati. Therefore, he says, all that is shining here is what actually? Therefore, manifestation of knowledge, when you say everything shines because of consciousness. The experience is possible because of consciousness. Therefore, he says, tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam. Everything here in this world, every object ultimately, absolutely shines after that. Ishvara, who manifests this knowledge here, isn't it? Tameva bhantam anubhanti sarvam, tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhati. This entire world, entire universe shines in the light of consciousness, Surupam of the whole Bhagavan. Tasya bhasa, bhas means again light. Because of the light of consciousness alone, everything shines. The entire world of inert material objects shines. Because light of consciousness. Minus light, the world of opaque objects will be as good as non-existent. Similarly, minus consciousness, the world of material objects will be as good as non-existent. There will not be absence of consciousness. I'm just saying. Understand? Therefore, there is no greater light than you. And when you understand this, yourself being the absolute light, you see everything as only manifestation of the only light of consciousness. And that, you see light, everything is what? Every object shining symbolizes what? Every opaque thing shines. Every opaque thing is reflection of the light. Similarly, every inert material object is what? Manifestation of consciousness. Therefore, light, it is the, every object is what? Every object is the manifestation of the absolute light. reflection of the absolute light. Therefore, you see light, 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 light. Everything is light. There's only light. Only light of consciousness. That is what is understanding of this fact and having a different perception of the world and the self, wherein you resolve all the differences. And that is called what? That is what is Deepavali. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.